Seeing as you're going to gatekeep Atlantis from me, allow me to just summarize some of this history and then maybe you can share your insights.
Mm.
Deep back in prehistory, there are two civilizations, the Atlanteans, which are warlike, and the Lemurians, which are peace-like.
Uh-huh.
There's no evidence of Lemuria now because the land bridge that connected Madagascar to the subcontinent of India has since sunken into the ocean.
Uh-huh.
There may be, however, sunken cities on the bottom of the sea floor. But before I get ahead of myself, there was a thermonuclear war between these two civilizations, and the Atlanteans won. That's actually what sunk the subcontinent, the land bridge of Lemuria. And so they retreated back to Hyperborea, which is a fertile rainforest-type zone on top of the North Pole. And the entrances in the North and the South Pole, they went into the middle of the Earth, which is Agartha. Right now, Hitler is there with the Spear of Destiny surrounded by UFOs and 7 foot tall translucent white people. What part of that is inaccurate? It's tens of thousands of years of prehistory in which humans live alongside our ape-like ancestors, for lack of a better term. To what degree are human beings today different because of this ancestry?
Actually, one of the great revelations of the last 20 or 30 years of research is that our species, Homo sapiens, is really a composite. You know, as recently as, say, the 1980s, you had this theory that they used to call mitochondrial Eve, the idea that mm-hmm. they genetically traced back sort of one line of ancestry.
Right, right.
And they could sort of localize it to somewhere around the East African savannah. And mm-hmm. there was still that, you know, obviously they called the thing mitochondrial Eve. It's got biblical connotations. There was still that idea of a homeland, if you mm-hmm. like, or of an original kind of place of origin for our species. One of the things that's completely transformed this picture in the last 20 or 30 years, which does come out of research in genetics, as well as fossil discoveries all around the continent of Africa, is that actually Homo sapiens formed through the interaction of a whole variety of different populations
mm-hmm.
that were actually remarkably different, even physically different, from each other. I mean, we tend to fight wars these days mm-hmm. over tiny things like pigmentation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the amount of times you've talked about white people compared to the kind of differences that existed back then, we're talking like 500,000 years ago, these were people who looked radically different
like
from each other.
Very different sizes. Even.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's almost like a sort of Tolkien-esque reality in which
yeah,
you have
yeah.
sort of elves and mm-hmm. et cetera. That is the kind of mosaic of different populations out of which mm-hmm. our species, Homo sapiens, mm-hmm. crystallizes around 300,000
yeah.
years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have other populations which already existed, like the Neanderthals or Denisovans
mm-hmm.
in colder climates. And when Homo sapiens migrate out of Africa into those areas, they encounter and mix with and often also reproduce with those other varieties of human.
Mm-hmm. Forgive me again for how stupid this question is going to sound, but this is a
yeah.
very big topic of debate on Twitter. On similar platforms. The argument goes something like, I think this is also Hayek's theory of humanity emerging from the savannah, but as people move north to colder and colder climates, they have to be able to think with a longer time horizon is the term that they use, and that you have to create a stockpile basically for the winter because you won't be able to farm or to gather during the cold months. And so this forces people to develop further cognitive capacity and become more evolved based on moving into the colder climate. How does that narrative match up against the actually existing historical record?
Well, there's no evidence for it. They're simply...
You're telling me it's something that Hayek just made up out of his own racist imagination?
No, I don't think he made it up, because you can find it all over the literature from the Victorian period.
He's pulling from them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean,
is this someone else's racist imagination?
Yeah, it's like, what did that guy say? That it's always somebody else's defunct theory, which is picked up and then reproduced, which in its day was the received wisdom, is that there was this sort of alpine race. This was the, nobody reads it anymore, but the Martin Bernal book, Black Athena, was all about the reinvention of the ancient Greeks, that they had to have their sort of African and Semitic roots had to be sort of extracted in order to introduce this idea of an Aryan element,
right,
which came from northern climates and had all these you know, environmental advantages that somehow they had to connect the ancient Greeks. Because as you know, it's quite warm in Greece.
That's kind of the problem. Yeah.
If really cold climates is what gives rise to high intelligence, you then have to somehow explain how do you get Plato and Aristotle and all those guys in a nice Mediterranean country.
Never mind that there's a whole bunch of people who live in cold climates who are not white, but
quite.
We'll just leave that out for now.
Right. But, you know, this is why you needed to invoke theories of migration to explain... How they got down
there. Creative problem solving.
Yeah.
Okay.
It all hangs together, and it did all hang together in the Victorian mind. You know, this is how we will explain away the impurities in our own kind of family tree. But, you know, this is Victorian race science. It's simply not something that holds any water or that can be taken seriously today. And, you know, when we talk about humans evolving in Africa, Africa's a really big place with a lot of different climates.
Yeah.
And actually, we have evidence now that early human populations had already adapted to an incredible range of different environments within the African continent. Everything from, you know, savanna to rainforests, mountains, and everything in between, long before humans actually left the continent. So the idea that there was just this kind of nothing, you know, this kind of stasis until people, you know, reach Sweden or something.
Right, right.
Is frankly bullshit.
This is, I mean, a very popular argument today. I think it's first advanced, or maybe it's most famously advanced by Charles Murray, the co-author of The Bell Curve. But they will point to European architecture compared to the architectural features of Africa to say that these people are less developed. What do we find in the historical record about the development of architecture in the African continent?
Well, you can start with Egypt. You know, this is why it's been so important for racists to divorce ancient Egypt from the African continent so that you can have bizarre conversations like this.
Yeah.
You know, ancient Greek architecture in the 7th and 6th centuries BC borrows directly from Africa. It borrows directly from Egyptian prototypes, those columns and so on, statuary as well. It's what historians used to call the Orientalizing influence, which comes actually from North Africa and around the Eastern Mediterranean and Western Asia. So, you know, the whole premise is basically back to front. If you want to look at sophisticated architecture, say 5,000 years ago, the most sophisticated architecture in the world is in Africa.
What should we make about topics discussed today, something called the Flynn effect, that presence in advanced technological civilization has the impact of raising one's IQ over subsequent generations?
So I don't know anything about the Flynn effect. I have seen studies recently that claim to be able to reconstruct the IQ of prehistoric populations.
How would you even possibly?
You can't.
Okay.
But these studies are actually starting to get traction, and they're not coming out of fringe groups or something. I'm talking about like university campuses. I don't understand how this stuff gets through the sort of peer review process into up to the point where anyone takes it seriously. But it's clear to me that not only is there a renewed interest in this, but there is significant kind of infrastructure behind it that is pushing this kind of ridiculous idea. I think it needs to be carefully critiqued.
This is the argument that the right is making now, that Asian people are naturally docile, that they can be ruled over by Mao or Xi, for example, and that white people are individualistic and rebellious, and this thing has a genetic basis in their DNA.
They need to look at a bit of Chinese history. I mean, the history of popular uprisings and insurrections in China beats the hell out of Western Europe.
Yeah.
Like, there are way more. I mean, somebody actually, a Chinese historian actually calculated how often they had revolutions and uprisings, like over the long term of history, as far back as the written record goes. And the figures are absolutely astonishing.
Okay.
I mean, the idea that this was a docile population, actually, even, you know, we were talking earlier about the strange decision of the Ming Dynasty to withdraw its fleets from the Indian Ocean.
Yeah, yeah.
The Ming Dynasty came about exactly that way. Actually, many of the famous empires and dynasties of ancient China started out as peasant uprisings or urban insurrections, including the Ming.
Okay.
The idea that this is a docile population is frankly bonkers.
Mm. What do you attribute this kind of recent, let's say, genetic view onto archaeology and human civilization? You were saying that there are quite moneyed interests that are funding a lot of this research. Hi, everybody. This is Joshua Citarella. What you just heard is an excerpt from this week's bonus episode. If you want to hear more and get access to the full catalog for Doomscroll and other podcasts, you can support the show on Patreon or Substack, where I'm putting out new episodes every week. This is an independent show. I don't do any advertising. So your support is really what keeps this project going. Thanks for listening. See you again soon.